This is Scott Richmond
and Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, good morning. Today we have some special programming.
As many of our listeners know, John Engen, long-term mayor of Missoula, died on August 15th. And we were lucky enough over the past 6 years or so to have him on our show many times as a guest. And we're going to use the next couple of weeks to share with our listeners again the comments, thoughts, and life of John Engen.
Good morning, Arnie Sherman.
Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
I'm pretty excited about being here. We have Mayor John Engen joining us.
Yes, we do.
And there's so much going on in our little town. Remember that song by, Paul Simon, Our Little Town?
Right.
There's so much going on here that we have to get the mayor in here to get briefed and up to speed on what's happening. It's tough living and working in a small town because you're under a microscope. The mayor has been under a microscope. There have been, as you know, a long article in the paper a week or so ago about him going into alcohol rehab and its bouts with depression. That kind of thing in a big city is a little bit easier to sort of blend into things. When you're in a town of 70,000 and you've, you know, confessed and, you know, publicly like that, everybody is kind of watching
it's
you.
Big news in a small town.
It's huge news in a small town. And we have the mayor here today, and hopefully he's not going to have the same reaction to our questions. But there's a lot of issues to talk about. You know, we had him on, maybe a year ago almost now. And
yeah.
We talked about Montana Water. Mountain Water and Missoula Mercantile, and now there are many more issues, including probably potholes.
Yeah.
You know, the winter's been rough here, and everybody's grumbling about why their streets haven't been cleaned and why there are potholes.
And, well, look, if you look at social media and you see the response to the article in the Missoulian with the mayor, a lot of the content you see is about potholes, the bridge, taxes. I mean, these are pressing issues.
Right, and it affects people every single day.
Absolutely.
So we'll have John in here, the mayor, and we'll press him on these issues.
And I like John because this is not a New York Times thing. He's not barring us, okay?
Right. He's not barring us.
He's got us here. He's not barring us.
He's walking in right now and getting himself settled. And when we come back from the break, we'll be plummeting him with questions.
You are listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO. All right, Arnie, we're back.
We're back with Mayor John Engen, our mayor here in Missoula, Montana, since 2006. Up for re-election this year?
Correct, yeah.
In November of this year? John, how you doing?
I am well. Thank you, Arnie. Great to be here.
You know, we were just talking before you came in the room that it's tough being under a microscope in a small town. You know, all mayors, all public officials have, to some degree, you know, that kind of accountability. But in a place like this where you know everybody's name, I've seen you in action. You can't walk through Albertsons without being stopped 9 times. And it's not just people stopping you saying, "Hi, John." It's people stopping you saying, "Why do I have potholes on my street? And when the hell is the snow going to be picked up? And why isn't that, you know, a passenger bridge over Reserve Street working?" And I mean, you get hit. You must get hit 20 times a day by the average constituent of yours asking you those questions.
So, you know, I operate with a simple rule of thumb. When you beg for a job, you do not complain about it. Right? Right.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's part and parcel of what I do. And frankly, I wouldn't have it any other way. I like to be accountable, and I like to know what's on folks' minds, which is why I do my own grocery shopping.
And that's why you're running for re-election.
It is, yeah. This is a great city to be mayor of, we have some work to do, but we've got a great crew who wants to do it. We've got a great community pushing in the right direction.
So let me get the most important issue
yes.
out of the way.
Potholes. Yes.
Okay. It's winter here every year.
Turns out,
every year. And every year, we end up with potholes in the street, and we end up with ice and snow on our side streets.
Yes.
Right? And maybe this year more than last year, for example. And that infuriates people. The mayor of Chicago got thrown out of office 1 year. Michael Bolandic got kicked out of office because he couldn't fix potholes. And Jane Byrne, who succeeded him, made that her number one campaign issue. So you know it's in people's minds, and they approach you. So really, what is the situation here, and what can we do to improve it, if anything?
So we actually do pay considerable attention to potholes. We have a pothole hotline. We have a patching truck that's been out this week on double shifts, filling those holes. So the challenge here is, as you suggest, there's winter, and it's a thing. And we've actually been sort of fortunate this year. So we had potholeageddon probably in 2012-ish, something like that. It was a
school bus disappeared.
Yes, I mean, it was a horrible. So potholes are all about freeze-thaw cycles, right? And we had a gajillion freeze-thaw cycles that year. And potholes were terrible. They're not great this year, but they're not as bad as they've been. The fact of the matter is, we are always going to have them.
Right.
So what we do is our best. So a couple of things are at play. One is we were just in Helena on Wednesday before the House Transportation Committee lobbying for an increase in the fuel tax, a tax that has not been increased since 1993.
And what do you think a reasonable increase in that is? I've heard they're talking about 8%.
Well, it's eight pennies a gallon.
Right.
Yeah. And for us, that's better than $1 million a year. And that goes a long way in terms of maintaining streets. And this is really about maintenance. The other piece that we're engaging in is a full street inventory to understand exactly what we're up against. We've done windshield surveys over the years wherein, basically a very skilled, city employee with a lot of experience drives around, looks at streets, and we try to note their condition. We're actually looking at a consultant to help us do that this time around, and we'll have a plan to address it. It is tough. There is never enough money to meet the need, so we set priorities, and then we try to get out and patch them as we can.
Right, and it's never going to be perfect.
It's never going to be perfect.
Well, give us a sense. What's the capacity? How many can you do? How many streets can you cover? Potholes can you cover in an average day with your work crew?
I couldn't tell you the number per day. I can tell you that in that year, that potholeageddon year, we filled 880-some potholes that season, and that happened over the course of probably a month. So we're knocking them out.
How much of the budget is earmarked for that, for like filling potholes? Just give us a range.
So our streets budget is in the millions of dollars, but in that millions of dollars we do chip sealing and that sort of maintenance. We push snow around. We buy magnesium chloride de-icer. We plow. We take care of sidewalks. So all of that is
under the budget.
Is in one budget.
Sure.
And so we're always walking this fine line between having enough money to take care of what we need to take care of in any given year.
Right.
And not having too much money in a year when there's no snow.
Right.
Right. So it's, again, if
but you don't need us to impress upon you how important this issue is.
No, he knows.
So the fact of the matter is that I have more conversations about snow clearing and potholes than I have about just about anything other than naked bike rides. and the fact of the matter is, and as I impress upon staff, one of the best ways we can restore or lose the trust of our citizens is by not taking care of fundamental stuff. Mayor Bloomberg had pretty good success in New York City. The biggest bump in the road he ever had was when he couldn't clear snow. Mayor Greg Nickels of Seattle didn't clear snow one year, and he got bounced.
Yeah, sure. Mayor of Chicago, we just talked about.
Exactly. Yeah. It's important to people.
I lived in Chicago for 5 years, and my first day in Chicago, I was pulling into my house, and somebody asked me if they could help shovel out a spot. And it was the mayor of the city of Chicago at the time, Mike Blandick, and the city councilman from that district, Danny Davis. They actually shoveled my parking
daily.
Place.
Nice.
That's how important that issue was in the city of Chicago.
Oh, it is. Well, look, let's pivot to another question, which is taxes, because people always want to talk about.
You got all the easy questions to start off with.
And I heard that as taxis. So this taxis. Is a, this is an Uber conversation.
Don't have enough taxis in this town too.
The one thing you hear a lot from folks, especially in social media, the echo chamber, right, of social media, is taxes. And they look at the mayor and they're like, "Okay, are we going to have another tax increase? What is that tax increase going to be? What is it going to cover that we're not covering today? So I want to give you the forum to say, talk about that.
Sure.
Please.
So as long as I am mayor, I can almost guarantee you that there will be an annual tax increase because we have contracts with our employees that that commit us to paying them more year over year. So any given year, we're going to need, give or take, $1 million more to pay people. And that's a function of our labor contracts.
Right. That's for that's not growing staff. That's just paying your existing staff.
Yep.
The fair
where they're contractually bound.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Most of what we pay for at the city of Missoula is labor.
Right.
And this is very much a people business. And the lion's share of our labor force is made up of police officers and firefighters. We have quite an emphasis on public safety. We also employ, as we were discussing earlier, we got folks who are pushing snow around and filling potholes. We've got folks taking care of kids in our parks and our swimming facilities. We've got folks running a wastewater treatment plant. Soon we'll have
animal control.
Soon we'll have folks running a water company. And all
composting,
of that
a composting
operation.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. All of that requires, money. I view taxes and I am a taxpayer. The beauty of local government is I enjoy the benefits and suffer the consequences of my and council's decisions, right? So I'm with you. And there's some poetry in that, I think. I view our municipal taxes as an investment. I view all taxes as an investment, but
sure.
But these are an investment in the fundamentals of commerce, life, recreation, work, education. You don't step out your front door without being impacted by the city of Missoula.
Right. So do you personally prefer, you know, general taxes, or do you prefer more like user taxes? For example, you know, spot issues would be considered user tax, bed fees and hotels.
Right.
So I like a combination, right? So there is the, you know, we have a social contract around taxation, and that is we all need to contribute to the general welfare of our population. That happens in the form of schools and counties and states and municipalities. The challenge with our system is that in the state of Montana, we don't have a great mechanism for capturing revenue from folks who get to enjoy our infrastructure.
Right.
Without they don't pay for it. Right. It's largely on the backs of property owners. And that's the pain and the tension that I hear the most is, you know, I'm a property taxpayer. Everything is on my property taxes. And that's sort of the nature of the system. I call it a one-legged stool, right? Mm-hmm. So municipalities have property taxes to rely on. We do rely to a certain degree on user fees. Those are associated with some of our special districts. They're certainly associated with the price of permitting, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is that we don't have a diverse revenue stream. And so a lot of what we do is about property taxes. Fortunately, we live in a community where I think the lion's share of folks view taxes as an investment, right. And they're willing to tax themselves. Those bond issues are clear examples of that, whether it's a school revenue bond or a parks bond.
It's a vote. We are on listening to What Do You Know with Scott Narney. Our guest is Mayor John Engen.
So let's talk about the mercantile. Last time we were on, it was we were confident, you were confident that the issue was going to be resolved, and we're going to get new vibrant hotel project downtown, and that's happened.
It has come to pass, yeah. So I actually had a conversation with Andy Holleran.
We've had on the show before, the developer of that project.
Yeah, from Homebase. Andy continues to be bullish on Missoula.
Which we love.
Yeah, and as do I. And so it's interesting, as things have developed over the course of the last 18 months or so, the Front Street corridor is sort of the hottest stretch of road in Missoula. So we start at the Riverfront Triangle property, which is on Front Street and Broadway. So we're looking at a probably $150 million to $200 million of investment and development there.
Hotel and parking and retail and commercial.
Yep.
And conference center.
Exactly. We march. So we march east. We get to the Mercantile, so that will be redeveloped into a hotel, retail, restaurant.
Right.
We go a little bit east of there. We've got a student housing project
right.
tipping up that'll put, you know, something on the order of 400 souls living downtown. We go a mere block west of there across the street. We've got a 40-some-odd million-dollar library
right.
That we'll be tipping up there. And then we go across the Madison Street Bridge, and we'll look at millions of dollars of new investment in the DoubleTree Hotel. We go further down out East Broadway. We've got Missoula College. And then back in the middle, I forgot about the Holiday Inn, which is also being right. refurbished. So
the old sawmill district,
yep.
of course.
So an old sawmill district. So you look at that stretch, and you've got hundreds of millions of dollars of new investment in downtown Missoula.
People. All adjacent to our river, by the way, which is taking advantage of the beauty of the river.
Right. Absolutely.
Which is what most big towns do.
So the critics of all of this say Missoula is going to lose its hometown feel. We are moving away from what makes Missoula great and the, you know, one of the top 10 small towns in America by some people's list. And now we're just going to look like every place else. We're going to have all the same kind of stuff. What's your reaction to that?
Well, for one thing, that the fact that we have a river and that we're developing along the riverfront is a critical difference. There is nothing generic about the Clark Fork River Valley.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that there are lots of places around the country that would do their best to recreate artificially the Clark Fork River Valley. We have a walkable downtown. We have an existing downtown, and it will continue to be funky for a very long time. It will just have more souls supporting it and continuing to make it viable. You know, I grew up in this city when downtown was dead. And
it wasn't that long ago
and frankly what makes downtown alive are human beings taking in air and spending money.
So we put the old sawmill in, we have condos, and we're gonna have student housing there, and we're gonna have apartments, and we have mixed use kinds of things going on, and it's going like gangbusters. Every unit that's been built has been sold. You're gonna have Riverfront Triangle coming in, you have the Mercantile, you have all these other things. And we had Dawn Maddox on a couple of weeks ago, and the average home price in Missoula now is $286,000. That's a mean price. And salaries don't appear to be keeping pace with the cost of average housing in town. What are we going to do about that? Are we going to price the typical Missoulian out of living in the town that they love?
The typical Missoulian has been priced out of living in Missoula from a home ownership standpoint for quite a while. Wages simply don't meet housing prices,
and why is that?
It's a function of inventory. So there are two pieces here. One is you got a great place to live.
Mm-hmm.
You have folks with means from other places who don't have to work or don't have to deal with Missoula's wage, or can deal with Missoula's wage in addition to some equity they bring to bear on a home purchase, and they can make it work. If you're a young person starting out in Missoula today, you're going to be hard pressed to make it work without some help. So that's why I hired Aaron Payhan, who is now our director of housing. We are working on housing policy, which we haven't had at the city of Missoula, to look at inventory and those opportunities to understand our marketplace and what's available. It's home ownership is different from, you know. For better or worse, I'm middle-aged, and my interests aren't exactly what a millennial person's interests are, right? So,
well, more and more millennials are living at home until they're 30 years old now, right. Which is a big change from when we were that age.
Right.
Right.
We wanted to get the hell out.
Right. And more people, you know, my age and older are looking at, you know, we're no longer looking at the 2,500-square-foot rancher on 10,000 square feet. We're looking at, how can I have a three-bedroom joint that doesn't require me to do a whole bunch
right.
of work, that allows me to travel, but I can still entertain my right. family? So housing models are changing a bit. So what we want to do is really understand this market and the need, and then be really intentional about how we address it. you know, we have resources at the city of Missoula, and we have partners in the private sector, whether for-profit or nonprofit housing developers who are interested in this stuff and want to make stuff happen.
Well, it's such a regional difference. Mm-hmm. I have relatives and family that live in Ohio.
Yep.
And you go to a city like Cincinnati, which is a pretty nice Midwest city, and there's a lot of housing stock around 200,000 and under that you can live in. And the salaries are higher.
Yep.
You know, we just have that.
But well, we're trying to create jobs. We're trying to create new jobs. Here we have a number of people trying to do economic development. We've had them as guests.
Sure.
Right? But that's not something that's a snap of the finger.
What I seem to see happen, and I haven't been, you know, advising on this, what I see is companies start here, and then they just fall into the same pattern of paying, you know, they ask everybody else what they're paying as wages, and they just kind of pay the same wage or maybe a little bit more.
I think
there's nobody in here raising the bar, so to speak.
So
am I wrong about that, John?
Well, I think the labor market is becoming tighter, and we're going to see that's a trend in Montana and Missoula in particular. So here is the combination, Arnie. I think you've got a really nice place to live. You have a lot of people who want to live here. And at some point, though, you start to lose some of that workforce piece, right?
Right.
And when the labor market is tight, those wages necessarily start to rise. There becomes pressure there. So here is the marked difference between Missoula and Cincinnati. There has been out-migration in Cincinnati. There are hundreds of thousands fewer people living in Cincinnati today than lived there at the heyday.
Right.
That is not the case in Missoula. We grow 1.5 to 2% a year, year over year.
Right.
Rain or shine. And unless we have a housing inventory that starts to keep up with that.
Right.
And at some point, you know, we're going to need to have workforce in particular sectors to support changing demographics, et cetera.
Well, that's part of the reason for putting the investment in Missoula College.
Right. Yeah.
Which swings me to the university. What is the effect of having decreased enrollment, regardless of what the reason is?
Yeah.
We have decreased enrollment for 6 years in a row at the university.
Yep.
And we have a couple thousand less students than we had, you know, in the heyday when we peaked.
Yep.
What effect does that have on the town?
It has. So there is a slight chilling effect is what it is. And it creates some level of
anxiety.
Anxiety, doubt, trepidation. So I had a conversation with a developer a couple of weeks ago who expressed concerns over, you know, what is the long-term viability of the University of Montana? And I had had lunch with President Stearns last week, and I called Sheila and said, can I put you together with this developer to have a conversation about your view of the future of the University of Montana and what you're doing to turn things around? And she, without hesitation and with tremendous enthusiasm, said, absolutely happy to have that conversation because things are turning around.
Right.
We have real opportunities here. So, you know, again, I have the advantage of having lived here for a long time, and the university was a much smaller place when I was a kid.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is, always growing is not always necessarily good, right?
Right.
And there are peaks and valleys, and there are changes in what the student appetite is for educational pathways, right?
Right.
So when the oil fields are hot in the Bakken, everybody wants to go become an engineer, right?
Exactly.
And they don't want to be a philosophy major.
Right. Right.
So but there is some solace in, or some satisfaction or confidence in, of stability.
Yes.
Right? You don't necessarily always have to be growing.
Right, but you want to be stable.
Retreating.
Right.
So what I think you're hopefully telling us is that the leadership now has a vision on how to put us in a position where we'll be stable and maybe continue to grow, but not necessarily make growth as the only indicator of a healthy university.
Right. Now, you know, and President Engstrom was, you know, he set things in motion with regard to turning enrollment around. President Stearns very interested in that. Tom Crady, who's the VP for recruitment, is all over it. He's a really confident guy. And I've known President Stearns for a long time, and Sheila is not one to shine you on.
Exactly. There are some good indicators. I'm not trying to paint,
right,
as you're not certainly painting a doom and gloom scenario.
Right.
The foundation had one of the biggest year it ever had.
Right.
So people are rallying in support of the university, and most people do not want to see it decrease. They want to see it grow and prosper and and have a winning football team.
Which would be nice.
Most important thing.
You're listening to What Do You Know with Scott Narny. Our guest is Mayor John Engen. I want to ask a question. I want to paint a picture for our audience. The mayor looks really good. He looks relaxed. He looks comfortable. He's wearing mala beads. Okay. I had to call you out on that. But tell us a little bit about what you went through over the past couple of months, because I think that, you know, as a mayor, you live life in public, and people want to know, what was it like?
Yeah. So yeah, Arnie had suggested I live life under a microscope. It would have to be a really large microscope.
I knew he'd come with a joke.
I am an alcoholic, and it's something I've known about myself for a while, but also had some ability to control it until recently. So I quit drinking in the 90s for about a year. I quit drinking in 2010 for 6 years. I started drinking in May of 2016, and by October, friends had it had become very clear to others, not necessarily clear to me, that
it turns out it has
that effect.
Yeah, it does.
It turns out that I had no control over my drinking, and I, for the first time in my life, tried to quit and couldn't. On my own, I just couldn't stop. And so,
what do you think was preventing you from doing that? I'm curious.
What I learned in treatment for alcoholism over the course of a month is that I, like many others of my ilk, have a disease. We have a brain that cannot tolerate alcohol and loves alcohol. We have brains that. That's
the way my brain operates on pizza, by the
way. Right. Yeah, exactly. So the deal is, I have a disease that keeps telling me I don't have a disease. So without treatment, without a program, I am helpless on my own to stop.
Sure.
And let me ask you this.
But the benefit of being a public figure is that people that are in the community can look to him and see how he handled it, maybe identify some of the things that they're struggling with. And
yeah, well, how have people reacted? I mean, has it all been positive? And or are there people saying, you know, this guy's, you know, doesn't have a sensitivity to the part of this that you've just alluded to, and say he's got a problem. He doesn't need to be mayor anymore.
Well, there's certainly been some of that. I mean, there are people who view alcoholism as a moral failing.
Right.
It's
not treated like celiac disease, which is really an intolerance.
Well, that's the first.
Or peanut intolerance.
Right.
Any
or
addiction.
Intolerance. Everybody's pretty sensitive to that.
Well, the problem is it's education, because everybody dumbs it down to, this is a choice. Right. This is a willful choice. It's not a disease. And that's the exact, that's wrong.
Yeah. No,
that's wrong.
So this is a disease that kills people,
right?
And they die because they cannot stop using. And I am fortunate. I've got now 123 days of sobriety.
Right.
I participate in a program every day that helps keep me on track. And I have no expectation of compassion or forgiveness, because that's not anyone else's job, but people have been remarkably supportive.
Well,
and
that's
kind.
Good. That's really
and
good.
I've also had people tell me that this has helped them seek
that's
help.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
that's
well,
what I was
wondering. Because you're a visible figure.
Let me ask you a question. Do you feel like throughout that May through October, did it ever get in the way of you making decisions, your decision-making process, or your being able to lead?
When I am drinking alcohol, I am not at the top of my game. I am not as focused as I need to be. I don't work as hard as I need to, and I don't know that I'm not working as hard as I need to or as I'm focused.
Syndrome.
Right.
You get by, but you're right.
Yeah. You know, I operate under the function that I am Superman, and I drink differently from other alcoholics, and I can handle it. I can't.
The mala beads, which are on his right wrist, right?
Yep.
They're like wary beads, and you
put them. So these are a gift from a member of my staff. I wear them every day. I am now a bead guy.
It's great.
I learned to meditate in treatment, and that is part of what I do. It is a technique that allows me some peace. So when I was in treatment, I think everyone expected that the mayor of the city of Missoula actually would lead the meditation rather than have to learn it. But I learned meditation there from a retired congregational minister, actually.
That's nice.
I sat with a bunch of folks from all walks of life with addictions, and we learned ways to cope with stress. And so these beads are a great reminder that people love me and that...
And we do love you.
Thank you.
And
I can find some peace.
So let me ask you this.
I know when
you were going through your struggles with weight and you had your bypass surgery, that there is a correlation between the effect alcohol has on someone who has had that gastric bypass and the effect it has on you. Were you aware of that? Were you told that you might have that additional problem?
You know, we didn't have that conversation, and I was a non-drinker at the time, so I don't think it occurred to anyone that we needed to have that conversation.
That might have really jacked this thing up out. You know, not to make excuses, you have to take responsibility for your own behavior.
Yep.
But there is all the literature says that you become really alcohol intolerant. After that kind of surgery.
Apparently it happens a lot.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think he paints a really vivid picture, especially in the Missoulian article, about what's going on in his head as he kind of go into May, right?
Yeah.
And kind of what led you to. And I think people can relate to that. I mean, it's a very relatable story. Is there a reason why you didn't talk about it before you went into treatment, like why you weren't public about that? I know it's a personal thing, but...
Yeah, so I have talked occasionally about depression over the years. I've suffered from depression for a long time and have been treated for it. But I didn't know I was going to treatment until I went.
Right.
I was product of an intervention, and I didn't want to. I wanted to be back in Missoula to have a conversation about that with folks, rather than try to do it from a distance. Yeah.
By the way. You know, many members of the Democratic Party, which you're a member of now, are generally depressed as a result of what's happening in Washington.
Yeah.
So there might be some advice you can give to 65 million people who didn't vote for Donald Trump that they're having to deal with now.
Well, exactly. Well, one of the byproducts of that event is that Zinke is leaving his seat or is going to be appointed.
Right.
And I'm curious to know if Mayor Engen has any aspirations to have a higher office other than mayor.
So here is my theory. I'm not sure that there is a higher office than mayor of the city of Missoula.
He's so suave.
I know.
But there's a reason I say that. And it is, so there are a couple of things at play. One is every day I get to make a difference. So I wake up in the morning. My mantra is my job is to make lives better. And I work with 500 souls at the city of Missoula and countless other citizens to do that every day. And one way or another, every day, somebody's life is changed for the better by virtue of the work of the city of Missoula. And if you're one of, nearly 500 kicking around Congress and begging for money over a 2-year cycle in this environment, what do you get done? What are you able to accomplish? And I admire folks who want to do that work. I think it's terrific. Here's the other thing. I don't think I play in Billings. I don't think I play in.
Right. I mean, you have to be realist about what the possibilities are.
Right. I mean, I don't. I will tell you that this myth that no Democrat from Missoula can ever get elected to statewide office is a crock.
Right.
I agree with you on that.
The fact of the matter is if you have a solid, viable candidate who has good ideas, a great work ethic, experience, and some marginal degree of charisma, you can get elected all day long because people long for leadership. And in many cases, there are Democrats who would vote for a really good moderate Republican. And we've seen that in this state. And I think it goes the other way.
Well, for better or worse, putting aside what we all feel about the current president of the United States, if you would have told somebody earlier, a billionaire from New York City is going to be president of the United States who had never held a public office, you would say that's not possible. Just like people say, somebody from Missoula could never be elected.
Well,
but sure enough,
it
happened.
I said it wasn't possible.
I know. A lot of people thought it wasn't.
Well, Mayor Mike, He was elected, so sure. There it was.
Yeah. So let me switch gears completely different. You know, we talk about your public role. We've talked a little bit about your private struggles. But let's talk about a part of John Engen that maybe people don't know that would be interesting to know. For example, do you have a favorite TV series that you watch?
Yeah, so I have an unfortunate
addiction.
I like TV a lot.
Yeah. See, I did not know that.
Yeah, and the advent of streaming has turned me into interestingly, I have far less time since returning from treatment than I had before, oddly enough, and not sure what that's all about. But I typically a day at the office starts, you know, depending on the day, it can start at 9 or 10. But I'm usually up by 7:30 or so and looking at email and pondering life's larger issues. And I'm usually home by about 9:15 or so. And at that point, I will typically settle down on the couch. So I've been watching. So I watched a Netflix series called The Crown,
right?
Which I found fascinating, because it was history and a little costume drama. So it had everything a fella could need. So that was really interesting. I like science fiction a lot. And there's a ton of interesting science fiction stuff that's on Netflix currently. I also like comedies. I've been streaming Last Man on Earth, which is
that's kind of funny,
absurd and funny. And the renaissance of Saturday Night Live.
You force yourself to stay up to watch it.
Yeah, and well, the beauty is it's on Hulu, so I can watch Melissa McCarthy on that.
That's Spicer.
Whenever you want.
being spicy all day long with the rolling lectern.
I've got two recommendations to both of you.
Okay. Yes.
Pete Holmes in Crashing on HBO.
Okay.
Just bowed two weeks ago. Great show.
Been watching Westworld on HBO.
What do you think of that?
I think it's very cool.
We had a writer in here.
We had one of the writers on.
Oh, very cool.
Westworld. It's very, very interesting series.
And then Zach Galifianakis has Baskets on FX. Have you been watching that?
No, I have not.
Oh, boys, you need to. If you like comedy.
All the time, people, you know, that are my friends and say, there's so much product out there now.
It's amazing.
That
word of mouth.
10 years ago, you couldn't be caught off guard, right? Maybe you wouldn't be watching it, but you knew of it.
Right.
I'm approached almost daily when someone says, are you watching Suits? Or are you watching it? And I have no idea what they're talking about.
You recommended Public Morals, and I'm all over that, but it's not back yet.
No, I know it's not back yet. But because Hulu and Amazon has their own series, and Netflix has their own series, and all of the network and cable TV shows like TNT have their own series. There's just so much product
there's
out
too
there.
Much.
Yeah, there is really too much.
Let me take it back to a serious note. I have a list of questions I want to ask.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to move us away from TV back to... Oh, no, let's stay with TV, but let's talk about the KECI piece that ran recently.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Talk about that, John, because I think that it didn't paint necessarily a rosy picture, a good picture for any of the different municipalities or cities.
So tell our listeners what the piece generally says.
Oh, God, Arnie, I forget. But I think it was about credit card spending and access to credit cards for public employees and that what the dollars are being spent on and what's the oversight, what's the checks and balances.
Sure. So I think it would be I think that any news outlet would have a blast if they just went through every PO that we had.
Right.
Because you'll find that cities buy a lot of stuff that seems pretty funky, and if you don't put any of it in context, you're going to scratch your head a little bit. That story, this is pure speculation on my part. That story looks like a beautiful boilerplate consultant story idea for Sweeps Week. And I would guess that around the country, the there are consultants who say, all right, so here's what you need to do for sweeps.
That's the formula.
You ask for every credit card bill. And point out things that seem goofy. And I guarantee you'll find something that's goofy, and you'll find it in every municipality. I am always happy to look at our processes. I'm always happy to look at what we're doing. If there's anything that is actually untoward, we certainly deal with that, and we've dealt with that stuff over the years. There are human beings in this organization, and sometimes they're doing the wrong thing. In this case, There is nothing that has risen to the level of giving me concern, but if it's presented in a particular way, and I have, I'm being very careful here because I actually believe in the Fourth Estate. I believe that, that journalism and the press have a role in providing a check and balance here. I was a journalist. I worked for a newspaper for a long time. And so here is my concern.
That's how I found out about Ludafish.
Yeah. So I did the hard hitting stuff.
You were right on top of it. Breaking news.
Yeah, you need that, those checks and balances.
Yeah, but we also have a fundamental we have a fundamental responsibility to try to avoid gotcha stuff and try to put things in context around this. And some of this is just.
Well, it also falls into this whole era now of, you know, what's now referred to as fake news.
Yeah.
But there's always been, you know, they used to call it muckraking journalism.
Sure, yeah.
I was once nominated to be the crime commissioner for the state of New Hampshire. And I went up there and met with the governor.
Yeah.
And he basically said, you know, we're going to appoint you. We have to have the, we have to go through approval process, but you're my guy and I'm nominating you to be crime commissioner. And I woke up the next morning and the Manchester Union Leader, a very famous newspaper, which went after Hanoi Jane Fonda.
Sure, right.
You know, and went after Ed Muskie about him crying. You know, I picked up and there was a red banner across the front of the Manchester Sunday paper said, "Who is Arnie Sherman?"
Wow.
And they did a whole column and it was just mostly made up stuff. He says he's this, but I've talked to, you know, our sources tell us it's not exactly true. And, you know, I mean, anybody can take a situation and paint it one way or another. Yeah. We're just seeing that in the extreme.
Depends on what your angle is.
In the extreme now with this whole, when Breitbart is considered real news.
Right.
And New York Times and Washington Post is considered fake news.
Right. And so with regard to the KECI story, we are utterly transparent. There's no piece of business that you can't have and scrutinize if you want to. And we're going to do that. We're going to provide that information. We'll do our best to provide context. We, as much as it's been suggested over the years that I control the Missoulian or I control the TV station or the radio station or whatever, I don't.
You do?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
You don't control over us, as you can tell.
I got none of that.
Hey, our guest is Mayor John Angen. You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, presented proudly by Don Maddox, Glacier Sotheby's International Realty. Let's keep going.
I have a related topic, but an important one. It's been in the news here and nationally. What's the situation? What's the city's position on refugees?
So here is. I had a great experience today. I was at the Margaret Johnson Theater at Sentinel High School.
Right.
And I'll just give a little shout out to Margaret Johnson, who was the theater teacher at Sentinel for many years. I was a Hellgate kid, but Margaret was fabulous, and I got to know her a little bit. There are probably 100 kids in the hall, and one of the young men said, "So what do you think about refugees?" I love the fact that a high school student in Missoula, Montana would ask me about refugees, right? So short version is I am the grandson of immigrants, and my people were not refugees. Refugees, by definition, are not welcome in the place they are. They need refuge from the place they are because they have been persecuted in one way or another, whether that's about race or religion or you name it. So is this a country, is this a nation where we welcome folks who need help and those folks over time enrich our culture and strengthen our nation, or do we build walls and say no and turn our backs on what we have done for lo these many years with regard to immigration, and that is welcome folks who need our help to our shores in the same way that our friends and neighbors around the globe are doing that work as well? Do we acknowledge our fair share and that we have a role to play in being a global partner, or do we say hell no? The rhetoric around this has been fascinating, and for me the short version is we have Missoula, Montana owes the world an obligation to take care of people, and we can do that without taking. Nobody has to suffer who's already here. These are, you know, taking care of our own and taking in refugees is not mutually exclusive. We can do both, and we can do both, I think, proudly.
And protect the community.
Absolutely. And you want to see a grateful American?
You
talk to somebody who came to this country with nothing, and you will find better patriots than people who were born and reared here.
Right there. I mean, this is not a logical argument. This is an emotional
one. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, there is extreme vetting. If you followed, we had an immigration attorney on the show a month back.
Yep.
These people are waiting 2 years. They've been screened by 16 police authorities, from Interpol to the FBI, on and on and on. They've gone through so many vets.
Yep.
You know, the administrations, the White House couldn't pass the vetting process that refugees are being subjected to.
Right.
But
good point.
But a lot of people who are opposed to, this fear-mongering that they're going to come in here and they're all ISIS members and they're going to destroy a town or kill people has overcome the logic of the situation.
Let's ask a related question, okay? So you hear Trump talking about the press as the enemy of the people. And you're a journalist, and you're a public figure. What's your point of view on that?
How is it that the dissemination of facts and information
and even opinion
and even thoughtful opinion that might be coincidentally fact based. How is that bad for the health of a nation? How is being able to have intelligent discussions, opportunity for dissent or assent? How is that a bad thing? How is KECI asking me about credit cards, regardless of the outcome, a bad thing for democracy because we at least get to talk about it, right?
Right, right.
How is the Missoulian asking where the hell is the mayor for a month a bad thing, right?
Right.
How is the Washington Post asking Donald Trump how he's going to divest himself from his businesses so as not to have conflicts of interest while he is president of the United States? How is that a bad thing? It's not. It's simply not. Without those checks, we are a lot of places that we were very afraid of for a very long time. There was a Republican president. I remember him. His name was Ronald Reagan. And he was dead set against a Soviet bloc that was all about quashing the press, all about controlling information, all about stifling freedom of speech. That's what the Republicans at that time were all about. Liberty was about being able to talk about this stuff. Liberty was about being able to push back against your government, which could be oppressive. Well, this dude wants it both ways. Can't have it both ways.
What do you think he's trying to do? Why?
I think he is, so again, having never met Donald Trump,
but
and trying to give him every benefit of the doubt and respecting the fact that he is the president of the United States, you got to have a thick skin in this line of work. That's all there is to it, whether you're mayor of the city of Missoula or president of the United States.
I mean, whether you like him or not, I think no one would disagree.
And guess what?
He doesn't have a thick skin.
And this isn't all about him, nor is it all about me. We are, he is a steward in the same way I am a steward. And I am responsible and accountable to the people I serve.
Sure.
Whether they voted for me or not. And the fact of the matter is that this office has to be less about him and more about us.
That's good point.
Exactly right.
Arnie, we're gonna wrap it up, but I like having Mayor Rangan in. I like this.
Are we taking
a
break or
No. We're gonna wrap it up because we kept going, but we have like 2 minutes left. But I like having the mayor on. I think we should have the mayor on more frequently because I think this kind of dialogue.
Start paying him if we have
no. Him well, listen, we're getting into a political year, so we got to be careful. That. But we have to. But you know what, John, I like having you in because I think that these are questions that people are asking, and I think having a dialogue is good.
Mm-hmm.
And the newspaper, the TV, the radio, I think it's just a good thing to have. So we should figure out other ways to continue that.
We would have this.
Maybe you can have a guest in with him.
The State of the City report on a regular basis with me.
Or we'll have him come in and talk with another
last
guest.
Last section before we leave. Why isn't our footbridge being
the
footbridge? The
bridge, right.
On reserve.
The one on reserve?
Yeah.
Because it's not done yet. Yeah. So,
who's funding it, by the way? That's a big question.
Yeah,
where's it being funded from?
So that's funded by tax increment from the Missoula Redevelopment Agency, right? So there are no new taxes that have gone into that. These are tax receipts that are generated through growth in this district. So So Cabela's, the development at South Crossing there is a product of a public-private partnership with the Woodbury Group. That new development there generated new tax revenue that we can then use to do public improvements like this bridge. Right. So the reason the bridge isn't open is because some of the panels came back. They're heated panels. They weren't right. So we sent them back. And
we're waiting for them.
Yeah.
Do we have an estimated time? We think.
You know, I think we're going to try to cut a ribbon in April.
Great.
We'll be there for that ribbon cutting.
Cool. Years from now, people are going to look at that and wonder why we didn't build it a long time ago.
Right. Any final messages you want to share with the audience?
No, you know, I love this community. I am grateful to serve as mayor of the city of Missoula, and thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's always enlightening, and it's always interesting, and always leaves us wanting more. So
fantastic.
Thank you, Mayor Engen.
Thank you.
Arnie, I'll see you next week.
See you next week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO,